Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, very special guest, Alveda King. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe and welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Ms. Alveda King. Alveda Celeste King is an American activist, author, and former state representative for the 28th District in the Georgia House of Representatives. She is a niece of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. and daughter of civil rights activist A.D. King and his wife, Naomi Barber King. St. Anselm College doctorate, Dr. Alveda King is the founder and president of Speak for Life. After her conversion to Christianity in 1983, Alveda has chosen to recommit herself to speaking for life and mobilizing an army of pro-life advocates that will boldly stand for the sanctity of life from the womb to the tomb. Hello, Ms. King, how are you today?
I'm good, and that's the womb to the tomb and beyond. Hi, Steve. How are you?
And beyond, the great eternal beyond. Thank you. I'm so happy to have you on here today. Thanks for taking the time. Let's just jump right in here. Do you remember your uncle? You were 17 when he was killed. Can you reflect on his legacy for us?
I was a young woman. I got married the next year. My father, his brother, civil rights activist and pastor Reverend A.D. King, walked me down the aisle. And then a week later, he was killed in the same movement that killed his brother. They were like President John Kennedy and Bobby Kennedy, or Moses and Aaron, and they worked so closely together. So absolutely, I do remember my famous uncle, great preacher, great father, civil rights leader, of course, and I remember him absolutely.
Was he a Republican?
Nope. He was not. He was independent in his own words. My grandfather, Martin Luther King Sr., Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Sr., was a Republican for many years, and he left the party when President John Kennedy, who was Senator Kennedy at the time, rescued my uncle out of jail. So my grandfather was so grateful that I think he actually endorsed President Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, your uncle stated, "I don't think the Republican Party is a party full of the Almighty God, nor is the Democratic Party."
Mm-hmm. He just said he'd have to speak to either one of them, so he was independent.
Yeah. So just topical today now, you know, there's the famous rapper Ice Cube. He just came out and said, "I don't know what's going on in the African-American community when it comes to Black people have supported Democrats overwhelmingly for 50, 60 years, and nothing has changed. So something's got to change," he explained. Do you feel that way too?
Well, Ice Cube, I'm glad he had the courage to say that. For a long time, I was a Democrat. I was elected into office as a Democrat. I've been appointed by two Republican presidents. I say that you should have good people and good politics in every political party. I happen to feel that way. I'm a Frederick Douglass Republican. Oh. So he certainly is right. The Democrat Party has made a lot of promises, but yet they delivered death through abortion or transgender surgeries of minors and all of that. However, the Republican Party kind of overlooks and marginalizes the African-American voice. So that's not as helpful either. So it's time for us in every community, but definitely the African-American community, to take a look at what our needs and goals and desires are, which are very similar to any human being, any American, and to stand for those and vote accordingly.
Well, your household growing up must have been just a cacophony of noises and sounds and voices and amazing oratory. And you, like you said, your dad was a civil rights activist. What was his opinion of the other activists from their era, like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton and the NAACP in general?
Many of them worked together. They had a common goal, and that was freedom and justice. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "I have a dream is rooted in the American dream." So you could see that my uncle, my dad, they were patriots, my grandfather, and we happen to know that. My uncle also said, "I have a dream that one day there'll be no Black power, no white power, only God power and human power." And then he quotes the scripture, Acts 17:26, "Of one blood, God made all people." Acts 17:26. So if there's one blood, there's one human race.
Wow, the human race. Well, you know, the National NAACP now board of directors and Derek Johnson, president and CEO of the NAACP, issued a formal advisory against traveling to Florida yesterday, alleging the state has become hostile toward African-Americans under the leadership of Governor Ron DeSantis. Is that true? Is Florida hostile towards African-Americans?
Well, you know, the NAACP and many organizations receive donations and things like that from big people who support abortion and transgender surgery of minors, welfare checks that puts the daddy out of the house and glorifies the single mom and leaving her to fend for herself. So all of these kinds of things are happening. And so when you see the NAACP, who probably is getting donations and money to propagate a certain agenda, that happens. And so many organizations often, and even churches and businesses and things like that. You can look at Disney, for example. And I used to really, really make good kids movies, and they still do, but it's been infiltrated with other content.
Yeah.
So when organizations are infiltrated by big pocketbooks, then you get that kind of a memo about Florida.
So does BLM and the reparations crowd and the bail reform movement, does that reflect MLK's teachings about content of character? And do they really represent the Black people they claim to?
Martin Luther King Jr. had a dream that there'd be no Black power, no white power, only God power and human power. So any particular effort to elevate and glorify one part of a population at the expense of all else is not consistent with the word of God. And so my uncle, as imperfect as he was, Martin Luther King Jr. was an imperfect human. So was my dad, granddaddy. So I'm imperfect too. But we serve and love a perfect God. And that's the message that we miss when we talk about Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's that element of repentance, of saying that we were all wrong. Lord, forgive us. And when we talk about reparations, for example, Jesus said that clearly, give unto Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's. So we could say that reparations is a human socially constructed issue. Reparations, pay everybody back that you've wronged. Right now we're talking about the Black people. So that's a man kind of a concept, that money can solve all problems. Now, I'm not really against reparations, but I'd have to see, I would like reparations to restore communities and to stop bad things from happening in communities. That's what I would like to see, that kind of reparations. But that's a man-made concept. In the Bible, there's a word that says jubilee. And with jubilee, everybody repents. Everybody becomes redeemed, humble. And it says, and give your slaves money, give them freedom and for the time that you enslave them and send them forth blessed. So I think with jubilee, it has to be repentance and love and mending of nations on every side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel bad because only 33% of BLM's $90 million in donations helped actual charitable foundations.
Money did 30% help? I'd be surprised if it was 30, because the founders were buying the $1 million houses and all that kind of stuff. So I'm surprised to hear that they even gave 30% back. That's a shock to me. I thought they kept more than that, honestly.
Yeah, well, her brother got a big chunk of it. So I guess we just move on from those folks, because that was not a good deal in general, in my opinion. So about you now, you obviously are very much involved in the pro-life movement, let's just say, or movement back to where it should be. I got a quote that you had said recently. What's interesting is that my mom wanted to abort me in 1950 because she was a college student. Abortion was illegal, but this exploratory procedure is what she wanted. That's amazing. Thank God that that didn't work out as
my
planned.
My grandfather just told her, don't do that. That's an abortion, and we don't kill our babies. We help them. We keep them. And
that's
she
beautiful.
Listened to him. I'm so glad she did.
Yeah, so am I. So am I. And so now today, obviously, there are women of all colors and all time making the same decision on a regular basis. And Planned Parenthood unquestionably has planted their flags in very close to low-income and minority communities, made millions of dollars off of the abortion business. What is your opinion of the political and the Planned Parenthood and the you know, Margaret Sanger wasn't a big fan of races in general. What is your opinion of the abortion environment in 2023?
The environment now, and I'm the executive producer of the film Roe v. Wade, award-winning film. I check it out and it'll tell you how abortion became legal in America now that it's been overturned, sent back to the states, but now we're going to need the states and the federal component. The federal and the states have to come together to protect the mother, the family, and the child. All of that's going to have to be done. Now, what's so terrible about Planned Parenthood today, they are promoting the abortion pill that can go across state lines. It can do all kinds of things. They get a telemed kind of a meeting, if they get any kind of meeting at all, the mother, and she takes the pill. And the baby's born wherever she happens to be, in a bathroom, in an alley, wherever she is. Great, tremendous pain. She gets to meet her baby, dying or dead. And there are repercussions afterwards, a lot of sicknesses and illnesses from taking that abortion pill. And I do want to say that we need to, that we were arguing, well, we won't support any presidential candidate or any candidate who doesn't agree at least to stop abortion at 15 weeks. I said, so what about 14 weeks is so many minutes and seconds, so you, that one's gone, but the 15 weeks, you know, save everyone that you can until you save them all, whatever that happens to look like.
Yeah. So Saturday, UC Berkeley hosted an exclusively Black-only graduation ceremony in defiance of civil rights laws that forbid racial segregation, directly contradicts the principles of racial equality and integration established during the civil rights movement. I know you speak a lot around the country. What do you make of these universities that are self-segregating?
We're one blood, one human race. We're not colorblind. We see and celebrate ethnicity. Of course we see ethnicity, and we should. I believe that when the institutions and colleges, almost like that same parent, the child says, I don't want to be a boy, I want to be a girl. I don't want to be a girl, I want to be a boy. And the parents support surgery. And then not long after, the child realized that didn't change them magically. And then sometimes they even commit suicide. Well, the same thing if you've got the schools going along separating the kids according to skin color and complexion, they're going to find out that that is not going to resolve the issues of society. So my uncle did say we must learn to live together as brothers, and I add as sisters, or perish together as fools. So he didn't say cousins, neighbors, anything like that. He said brothers and sisters, one blood, one human race. And when we see each other with compassion through the lens of John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believes on him will not perish but have everlasting life. For God did not send his son into the world, that's the next verse, to condemn the world, but that the world through him would be saved. So we have to see each other as brothers and sisters to be more loving, more forgiving and kind.
Yeah. Well said. I quote your uncle all the time on this show. I have time for one more question, I guess. Way back in 2010, I think it was you that said, it is statistically proven that the strongest institution that guarantees procreation and continuity of the generations is marriage between one man and one woman. I don't know about you, but I'm not ready to be extinct, and none of us wants to be, so we don't want genocide. We don't want to destroy the sacred institution of marriage. We've come a long way since then with transgenderism and the, you know, gay marriage in the Constitution, or the Supreme Court allowing it, et cetera, et cetera. Where do you stand on this today?
I believe instead of fighting and hating others, we should uphold the holy matrimony, the institution of marriage, God's way. And when we explain that and model it, then people will get a better understanding. You can get me all of the organizations, including Speak for Life and AFPI. And I'm still a consultant with Priests for Life. But the best place to start, you can see my music, my films, my articles, and prayers at alvitaking.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. We so much appreciate you. Are there any other socials out there that you want to pitch, or is that the best one?
Well, the social media is fine as well. I used to have 6 million on Facebook, 6 million plus, and millions on Twitter. Then it shrunk and went away. One of them, they took me and they put them back, and I don't. I'm on Truth PR as well. But alvitaking.com will tell you quite a bit about what Alvita's doing.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for coming on with us. Really appreciate it. And God bless you.
God bless you too.
Harvey Durham Health Insurance Agency is the trusted independent health insurance agency that you can depend on for all your health insurance coverage needs. He's great because he doesn't look at health insurance as sales. He looks at it as helping people and doing the best he can to solve your current long-term care, disability, and Medicare supplement needs, even pets. I know, I'm a client, and so is my lab, Caroline. Over 30 years of insurance experience behind every policy, give Harvey a call at 731-727-9242 or email him at harveydurham@harveydurham.com and tell him Steve and Steve at Mill Creek View sent you. I don't understand how you ever did without me.
I don't understand how I bring you down to your knees. Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show. That was Bono's MLK for the outro before our theme song. Where we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, what'd you think of our amazing guest, Dr. Alveda King?
Oh, I love Alveda. She's got the fire of her uncle, and we need to keep that thing burning. So thank you for bringing her on. Too short, but hey, better short than not at all. And I look forward to our next guest that you're going to bring in to talk about your mom. So I'm going to let you go.
Thank you, and lots of power in that short segment. So I was happy to have her on here, and welcome back to our segment two today. On the anniversary of the death of a loved one, the organization called Hadassah, the Women's Zionist Organization of America, says Kaddish as a reaffirmation of our faith in God and sanctity of life. The Jewish tradition reminds us that to fulfill the mitzvah of Yortzeit, it is customary to perform an act of charity in loving memory of our dear ones. So my way of doing that this year is a tribute to my mom, who left me 10 years ago to be with God, and my dad that died in 1977. We'll save him for another day, maybe 2027 at 50, if I'm still here. 3 Sivan Hebrew date, May 23rd, English calendar, May 11th, 2013, on the Gregorian calendar, we all live under. So thanks for indulging me. Dolores Fisher, 93 years old, I hope she won't mind me saying that, is a Napa, California resident and longtime friend of my mom, called her travel companion, affectionately, by Myrna, my mom. They did a lot together for us to talk about today. Winner of the Napa Valley College very first 1987 McPherson Distinguished Teaching Award for Excellence in Teaching and Outstanding Commitment to Quality Education, the McPherson Distinguished Teaching Award is funded by the McPherson Endowment established by the founding president, Dr. Harry McPherson, and his family, now held by the Napa Valley College Foundation. Dolores Fisher, how are you today?
Well, now that we've started, I feel much better. I had many fears that the whole thing would flop because of my lack of knowledge of computers. So I have a gentleman here with me who's done everything, and there have been some problems he had to solve, and they were solved, thank God.
Thank God. Well, it was meant to be. It looks great, and you sound great.
I didn't recognize you, Steve. What?
You look great. You sound great. It's all good.
I didn't recognize you.
Didn't recognize me with the beard?
Because I hadn't seen you with and now you look great. I just thought it was someone else. I didn't know it was you. So that's putting that aside, I'm here to talk about your mother and our friendship. We're not friends in our youth by any means. I met your mother when she first came into my, I don't know, I'm going to say my vision, when she ran for the Napa Valley College School Board, and she was elected. She was a great friend of one of the faculty members, George Boyette, and also of his wife, Mary Ellen, who taught at the high schools here. And they were friends of mine, too. So it was through them that I really got to know Myrna better. And at one point, apparently, she had, first of all, she took Spanish. I taught Spanish and English. And she was in my Spanish class, and she thought I was not a good Spanish teacher. To the end, she stuck to that. We never got through as to why. She expected something different, and I was pretty tough on students, I know. I had the reputation, and I was glad of it. I mean, I was proud of it, because we have to, at the college, we have to give the students the same courses that they get at the four-year institutions. But that's another point. So Myrna took Spanish for me, and she did very well. We got to know each other a little bit. And I remember one day, she stopped me after class and said, explained to me that she was widowed, although I think I already knew that, but nevertheless, and she was raising a young boy, Steve. And at that time, I think he was 12 or 13, and she was really asking for advice. And I, who had never married, had no children, I said, well, you know, it's a little different from teaching, I think, but we chatted about that for quite a while. And then after she had, meantime, she had become a member of our school board. And I knew that the school board was always in need of very responsible, intelligent board members. We've had some great ones, and we've had some that were very good. And we've had some that didn't really understand school very well. And Myrna certainly was not one of those. She got to know the teachers. She got to know, of course, the administration and the people that work there in other jobs. The staff, that includes everyone from the landscapers to the secretaries and so on and so forth. She knew everybody. She talked to them. She really worked hard to do a good job on the school board, and she did. Before she finally, but I guess she was on it for two or three rounds. Before she retired, she had helped to put in something she was very, very proud of, and that was called participatory, I'm glad I was able to say it, and I will not repeat it. the second word, participatory, yes. Keep saying that for the rest of the time I'm on. participatory running of the school. In other words, it wasn't just the president of the college who made a decision, went to the school board and said, we'd already had some of that under a previous administrator. I would say to the board members, well, this is what you ought to do. No, the participatory meant that all the other groups had a chance to speak and would be listened to, and what they had to say would be evaluated. And I think the college really approved because of that. And so she was very proud of that, and she really should have been. The last time I was with her, we went to the school board meeting. She was going to speak about a problem that had arisen, and that had to do with division of the area that is the Napa Valley College area into five different divisions, five different parts, so that there would be a representative from each of them. And what it looked like the board was going to do was to cut up the lower area, American Canyon area, into two different people, and they wanted one. In other words, not cut them down the center, but leave it as a large area, which it had always been with one person representing them. And so when she was telling me what she was going to speak about that night, I said, oh, I know something about that. So I got up and spoke too. And I'm very happy to say that other people did too, to stop this movement, to divide it up. And the division didn't occur. And I believe that was one of the last times that Myrna had any close association with the school board. Mm. Our friendship had developed after she had left my Spanish class and I was getting near retirement. She talked to the Boyettes and said she wanted to travel. She, the first time you were getting a little older and she felt she could leave you a bit. She didn't want to travel alone, which none of us really enjoy. And she wondered if I would be a good traveling companion. Well, the Boyettes knew me pretty well, though we'd never traveled. So they said, well, we think so. And she and I began to travel. And then what developed was there was a group of us, including the Boyettes and two other people. And we traveled. We had three marvelous trips to Europe, two to France and one to Italy. And in each of those trips, we rented a home. You can do this through the internet very easily, apparently. You rent a home overseas and you get the home. It's fully furnished. Everything you need is in the home. And we had some wonderful times. And it was, we all liked to do the same thing. We began playing cards in the evening to amuse ourselves. And that goes into another story, which I'll include later. But we did a lot of driving around France with these two trips. One time we were in East Central France, and the second time we were farther down in the Provence area. We had two French teachers with us, so we had two who could speak French very, very well. I could kind of peck away at it, having had a year of French in college. And Myrna didn't know any, so we teased her about that a bit.
And Mary Ellen was my French teacher in high school.
Oh, she, well, you know, she's a good teacher, and she was very fluent. And the other lady could speak very well too. So we all liked nice food, good food. So we got into the habit of eating light breakfast, and then having big lunches. And then light dinners at home, usually soup. We'd have big barrels of, looks like barrels anyway, of soup. And I was the least of all cooks, which is a very good position because you don't have to do very much. So I would say, the others were very, very good cooks. The other thing that Myrna did, and I too with the Boyettes, there was a book club that had been started by, I think, by the Poets. Perhaps there are other people involved. I never did know for sure. But I was invited to join. And then Myrna said, I want to join too. Can't you get me on the book club? And I said, sure. And I said, besides, club met once every other month at the home of one of the participants. And that participant had to prepare the main dish. The main dish was copied after what was in the book. So if the book took place, say, in France, you'd cook what you thought was French food. If it took place in Arabia, well, you had more fun figuring out what that would be. And so we enjoyed that very much. So when Myrna wanted to join, I said, yeah, then there'll be someone that doesn't cook, that cooks worse than I do. And she didn't, of course. I was teaching. She's a very good cook, you probably knew growing up. We did a lot of traveling together and had some interesting times. We went to New York two or three times. We went up to Ashland to see plays over a period of about 4 or 5 years. That was not a very long trip to Ashland, and we enjoyed the plays.
The Shakespeare Festival. The Shakespeare Festival held in Ashland every year?
The Shakespeare Festival, mm-hmm. Yes, which is a mixture of, if you stay a week, you get, I guess, 3 or 4 Shakespeare plays, and then you can get a couple of other non-Shakespeare plays. And it's a very beautiful place to visit anyway. There are lots of things to do in the nearby area. And I don't know what it's like now. They had terrible fires there a few years ago, you may remember.
Yeah.
We had friends there at the time, and that was nice too, visiting them. We took one trip to Alaska. The Boyettes were scheduled to go on this trip too. We left by ship, and then when we got to Alaska, we got on a bus and went all over. And that was very, very, very wonderful. The only thing I remember clearly about Myrna on that trip was that, she enjoyed it. But one night I apparently snored all night, and she was so angry with me. She moaned all day that she couldn't. She felt terrible. She really did. I felt sorry. So I said, well, wake me up and tell me. And she said, but you go right back to sleep. Well, I wish I did now, because I have trouble sleeping. But otherwise we had a fine trip to Alaska, and it was a very simple trip. It's so different from the trip where you go to visit the museums and see the places of interest where this happened, that happened. It's more for the outdoors person, of course. And we did see certainly a lot of the outdoors, and we saw the great mountain ranges. Everything just opened up for us. And the weather was wonderful. It's not cold.
Well, one thing I do know about my mom, how when she moved out from the Bronx, New York, to live in San Francisco and met my dad, and he took a vacation into Napa, which is 45 minutes north of San Francisco, to meet his mom, she had never seen a cow before. And so she jumped out of the car. Yeah. Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Well, she saw an animal she'd never seen. When they were driving around Carneros, I think it was, she asked her future husband to stop. She jumped out of the car and went and, I guess, crawled under the fence, which would be some kind of a wire fence, well-dressed. In the days that we didn't wear slacks at all. We always wore skirts and high heels and the whole business, because she wanted to impress his mother. And I'm sure she did. But maybe it wasn't the right impression, because, of course, she was petting the cows when out came the bull, the toro, came after her, and she had to run and get under the fence and just made it, I guess.
City slickers, right?
All muddy. Yeah, it's a wonderful story when she arrived to meet your grandmother. Do you remember your grandmother, Steve?
I do remember my dad's mother, and I remember my mom's mother very much. And I do know, growing up, my mom's backstory was always like fresh out of Blackboard Jungle.
where, you know, she was the young tough gal in the gang and everything. And then she comes out to Napa and she becomes this, you know, country gal who takes on so many things. And I, you know, her achievements included election to the governing board of Napa Parks and Open Spaces District, very proud of that. Appointment by Governor Gray Davis to the Napa Expo Board, which we'll talk about more in a minute. And the first year of the now famous Bottle Rock took place over the weekend that she passed away. Now it's 4 stages, 60 wineries, nothing like that ever before in town. I didn't live there at the time, so I missed it growing up. But I did go back on that very first weekend because I was there for her passing while that was happening. Mm-hmm. So she turned that into something that was, you know, the demolition derby and the hay rides in Napa for 70 years to one of the most famous concert venues in the country of over 3 nights. Does that sound about right?
Yes, yeah, she did. And it was the day of her funeral. It was the day before that the Bottle Rock had started, because the local paper had, do you remember that? Didn't put the announcement of her death in the paper till a day later because they thought they didn't have room with Bottle Rock.
Bottle Rock was in the way, yeah. And the best man at my wedding and best friend from high school, I texted him and said, "Mom passed." And he said, "I never thought I would cry during the Black Keys." He was at that concert at the very first night. And so, yeah, it was an interesting night. But that's jumping to the end. So I still want
to... Oh, yeah, let's go back to the things that happened. More beginning days. We had I'm trying to think of some of the incidents that were fun. At one point, Mary Ellen again and George Boyette and Myrna and I decided we wanted to have a sale, a garage sale. And I had the best garage for this. I have a very wide entry to the garage. And so, you know, we got it all together. And luckily, a friend of mine came to visit, Peter. He said, "I'll never come again when you're having one of these sales," because he got to do all the hard work. George wasn't able to walk very well. He collected the money, and I knew him very well. I knew he'd get the money mixed up, which he did. But nicely, we ended up with $117. He didn't know what to do with it, so we went out to have dinner. And Myrna was wonderful. She really knew how to sell things much better than I. If people said to me, "Can I have it for 30 cents or 55? Yeah, I'd say, yeah, get it. And she would give them that New York haggling, I think is what she
New York is a good way to put it, yeah.
"Oh, this is the best job." I remember one fellow wanted a jacket. It was a nice jacket. And he eventually got it at her price, which was very low, but he wanted it for less. And he came back 3 times. And she said, "No, it's not worth that. And yes, it's a nice jacket." And she really would have been a wonderful saleswoman.
Yeah, well, she was. She did real estate for all my life.
Yeah, she did real estate.
She was an elected member for over 10 years to the Napa Valley College Board of Trustees, and half that term was president of the board.
She was president. I failed to say that. I forgot that. Yeah. And it's a tough job. It really is. There are a lot of things that go on school boards that people don't realize. I'm always rather amused when people run for school boards and they make statements about the schools and they don't really know the school too well. You can tell by what they say. But she did not do that. She really investigated and understood what the problems were. And the big problem, of course, is always money. Mm-hmm. The school needs something, needs a lot of somethings, and there's never enough money.
She also served on the original board as treasurer for the Friends of the Napa River, which was a diverse group of business savvy Napans, Harry Price, my mom, Vince DeDomenico, Bob Johnson, and design and planning pros like Barbara Stafford, Julie Inman, yeah. Chuck Shineman, I think it is, John Clifton. Yeah. So I think it swept up the political energy of like guys like Mike Rippey and Bragg Wagon Connect and Cindy Waters. These are all elected officials that my mom worked with very closely on that. And Dr. Herb Weckler, you probably know better than I do, and so many more. 40 of them were there in the block living room late April 1993 for the first formal meeting, and they outgrew party barges and living rooms and met at Downtown Joe's. Tell us about the Friends of the Napa River. I have my theory as to why my mom was so engaged in that, but I'd like to hear your history of the Friends of the Napa River.
She was very engaged. When I first heard of the organization, I thought, well, what can they do to help the river? You know, the river's always been here, but I knew, of course, that the river had been highly contaminated. when I was a very little girl, I was born here in Napa. This is a few years back since you gave my age. We used to go swimming in the Napa River. We lived on the Big Ranch Road and would walk across the road to the other side, to the east side. And it was a long walk. And then we'd get in the river. It was wonderful. My father had done the same thing. He had learned to swim in it. Somebody threw him in one time. He said, I learned to swim. But the river then was beautiful, but it had changed so much. So there really was a lot of work for the organization to do to make people aware of what the river could do for this city. That's one big thing. People took it for granted. It was just there and people, the river, you just get across it. And I think they've done a wonderful job on that, because the awareness of it and what it has lent to the city in terms of beauty and the many, many beautiful views that are available now downtown, which wasn't
recreation true. Recreation. Yes. I mean, I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and I swam in that exact same river, and it was not as clean as when you were, and I'm sure it was worse the next couple of years. And she convinced Bob Mugabe, who was one of the biggest names in the county, to build Copia on the Oxbow, which is a bend in the river right there downtown, which came close to drowning several dignitaries, apparently. But in 1995, there was the Corps of Engineers' draconian new flood plan that spurred the legendary letter Friends sent to politicos, sounding alarm that the project was doomed unless it became more environmentally sensitive. March 3rd, 1998, when the flood plan passed with a countywide two-thirds vote, making Napa the global model for community involvement in enlightened flood management and carving out Friends' work into the 21st century. And that may sound kind of lame and boring, but Napa used to flood really badly, billions of dollars of damages on a regular basis, and it doesn't anymore.
Well, it goes back so far. When I was a little girl, I attended St. John's Catholic School on Main Street. And I remember going, I was so delighted because the yard was at least 3 feet deep in water or more.
Mm, yeah.
And I always thought it was wonderful. Anyway, the other thing I was going to say about it is that this last winter, when we've had so much rain, was a real test for that new river water system. And there were no problems. There was no flooding. And so what they had basically originally, as I remember, the plans were drawn up by a group here in Napa of what they wanted to do. And then the Army Corps of Engineers came in with a completely different plan. And eventually the Napa plan won out, and that's the one that we have. But the Army Corps of Engineers...
I've got five more minutes with you, Dolores. I really appreciate it so much. I want to read something to you real quick. The Napa County Resource Conservation District, RCD, lost a valuable member of its board when longtime local resident Myrna Baranowitz passed away in May. She was active in many local agencies and organizations, and we feel lucky to have had her input and expertise over the past several years of her life. She joined the board in 2005 and participated as an associate director, as well as being a member of the Standing Finance Committee, where her attention to detail helped craft many of the district's financial policies. Myrna was especially focused on her commitment to socially responsible causes and the environment. We will truly miss her enthusiasm, community spirit, and friendly disposition. So with her gone and her efforts to prevent development in the ag reserve areas, you know, no longer there, has Napa remained limited in growth, or has it exploded without her there saying no?
Say no? Is that what you said?
Without her saying no, has it exploded?
Oh, without her saying no, yeah. Well, they keep building more and more housing here in Napa. And of course, that's part of that whole Bay Area housing project or whatever it is. It's the state demands that this exists. It was a law. And they were assigned every 7 years to have so many units of housing available. A unit can just be a lot. And they say, well, this could be a house. And the whole county is allotted so many. And then each city is building thing, and talk a lot. There's a lot of talk about affordable housing, which no one really explains what is affordable. How would this for a family of four, which making so much money and so on and so forth, that could be figured out very easily. So Napa is growing. I don't think the traffic has gotten tremendous. No matter what time of the day or night it is, there's traffic on the main thoroughfares. and it's gotten more and more.
Okay, well, I have time for one more question for you. Sorry to rush away, but I have to. So she began working on her dream of a Napa Valley Jewish cemetery in 2006 when she joined forces with Donna Mendelson, co-chair of the Jewish Historical Society of Napa Valley, and then president of Congregation Beth Shalom. The pair started researching possible sites and sources of funding. Despite Jews having lived in Napa since the Gold Rush era, a Jewish cemetery had never existed in the area, which is very rare. Most Jewish communities, that's the first thing they do. The Jewish News of Northern California publication wrote, "Napa's first Jewish cemetery opening with a sad tinge. In a bittersweet twist of fate, a woman who worked tirelessly to create Napa County's first Jewish cemetery was among the first people to be buried in it. Myrna Abramowitz, vice president and treasurer of the Near Tamid Jewish Cemetery Association, put more than 7 years of research, planning, and advocacy work into the creation of the cemetery. She died May 11th at age 69. Near Tamid, meaning eternal flame in Hebrew, consists of 100 burial plots in a newly developed and landscaped section of the existing St. Helena Cemetery, a historical public cemetery that was founded 157 years ago. My dad is the one moved from the hell that is Vallejo to share her grave, and mine is right next to them, my final resting place back in California where it all began." Do you have any memories of her going through the motions and making that happen?
It was a very difficult project. Yes, I do remember. She went from cemetery to cemetery trying to see if they would allow space for a Jewish cemetery within their areas. And she was turned down. Here in Napa, Tulake, of course, said no. And there was another cemetery. I think there still is another cemetery along the highway. Nope. And then she went up to St. Helena and finally found people that would listen and agreed, and she was able to get that. And it's a beautiful area, as you will remember, a beautiful area. So I think that was a wonderful step forward.
Yeah.
One of the, did you remember, talking about her being Jewish, one of the things that some people couldn't understand was that Myrna and I were friends. I'm not Jewish. And my religion is Catholicism. And I'm 14 years older than she was, and I'm Republican, and she was very active, always in the Democratic Party. So I had some people say, "But you can't be friends." Well, why not? We are friends. We got along beautifully. We didn't go into that business. Once I did say to her something came up about God, and I said, "It's the same God. We worship the same God." So that never was a problem. Yet people, when they first heard that we were friends, found, well, how can that be? And I thought, that's a negative point of view. And she was never negative. That was something to her. And she had a great sense of humor. When we played cards, I don't know if you heard of the famous card games that went on and on and on about the last 6-7 years of our having her.
2 minutes
we
left.
We had been in Europe with, I'm short on this one. We'd been in Europe with these people, as I mentioned, on these three trips. And in the evening, we took to playing hearts. I was supposed to teach bridge, but they all said it's too much work. So we started hearts. Well, hearts is a game, if you've never played, you have to play to understand, can bring out the best and the worst in everyone. We started yelling and screaming at each other, just having a wonderful time. And I know she looked forward to it. We did that, as I said, for 5, 6, 7 years until, well, not only Myrna passed away, but most of the other members of our group passed away. I think there were only two of us left. And there were about six played, and we had wonderful times. I always look forward to it. I love to play cards, and we would have dinner and cards. So Myrna took part in that. She was always willing to do anything. Let's try this. Yes. I remember we were in New York one time, and she wanted to have you would remember the name of it. It's kind of Bioli? Is that it? Bioli?
I remember.
Well, she wanted one of those, and we went all over. She said, "I know just where we can get them."
Oh, a bialy, bagel type breads. Yes, yes.
Bagel kind of thing. Yes. And she knew this wonderful place. And I'd gotten up early. It was Sunday to go to mass, and I came back because I had no breakfast. So we started, and by 1 o'clock, we were still walking the streets of New York. And I said, "I can't take any more." We couldn't find a place. I think it had closed down. So just funny little things like that. We got into another place, and she said, "These aren't as good," but they were very, I thought they were very good. When we had our sailing.
Well, I really do appreciate you taking the time to share these memories with us. She loved you very much, and thank you. I love you very much, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. And I could talk on and on.
I
The
know.
only worry I had was the computer part, but that's been all right. Thank you very
All
much,
right.
Steve. Now, how do I turn you off? I'll have to
God
expect
bless
you.
you.
Okay, bye.
With Columbia, Tennessee-based EnergizeHealth.com, you lose fat fast, simply and naturally, without restrictive exercise or cardboard, dry, tasteless food. Revolutionize your health with this proprietary 88-day science from John and Chelsea Jubilee. People report getting off medications and reversing ailments. Energy, mental clarity, and alertness go through the roof. Look and feel many years younger and oftentimes unrecognizable. I know, I'm an alumnus and lost 70 pounds of fat with John and Chelsea and wouldn't have energy to do three shows a week without it. Hit the link in show notes for your free consultation and discount, money back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose but unhealthy fat. EnergizedHealth.com. Stephen Hatton is a vintage high school classmate of mine. Another Steve segment today. The only laid out on my ass tackle I ever had in my short football career, but nice enough to come back on here and talk to me as friends. Thanks for awarding me that, buddy. Steve is an educator at Napa Valley Unified School District. Steve, you're at Napa High, our crosstown rivals. What's up with that?
Yeah, well, when I started at Vintage, I started coaching back there and teaching there. And guess what? Money talks. And, you know, I had a little kid and I had to pay the bills. And Vintage had some openings and I didn't get interviews. So, you know, Napa's a small town.
I'm disappointed to hear that Vintage didn't offer the big bucks versus the rival school. That's not the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be backwards like that. In the 80s, it was.
Yeah, but whatever. It is what it is. I'm here now. I've been here for 20, almost 23 years now.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. Well, so this is the 10-year anniversary of my mom passing away, so half that time ago. And I got wind from another friend of ours, Sean, that you teach a class, obviously, in high school, and my mom is in your curriculum. And so I was excited to hear you teach me and my listeners all about my mom.
Excellent. Yeah, I teach three periods of college prep U.S. history. And two periods of AP government and politics and honors economics. And we talk about your mom when it comes to civil rights and 14th Amendment and talking about small communities and creating space for people and helping people, you know, do what's right. We're trying to teach them to, you know, speak for themselves and have minds for themselves and, you know, stand up for the people who don't always stand up for themselves.
She certainly has that. And she certainly left me with that legacy. You don't know this yet, but the segment before the segment that we're having now was Alveda King was my guest on the show. So this story about my mom and her activism in the Napa Valley is going to translate to the same person whose uncle did this for the whole country and the world. So it's a great civil rights story. So tell us, how you introduce it to the kids. And I'd also be very curious, are they particularly interested in it when there are such great names in the civil rights movement, Frederick Douglass and MLK and all the rest? Does my mom register with them? Or are they like, oh, wow, interesting?
Well, they hear so much, you know, about like a lot of the people that you've just mentioned, right? They've at least had it, you know, spoken of in their classes before. And then they come into my class and we kind of dig into it a little bit deeper, and they need some kind of connection, right? They need some kind of connection to their own lives and their own community to make history somewhat real. And when we're talking about it, we have, I don't know if you remember Todd Pridey.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So Todd, I teach with Todd Pridey and I teach with Paul Gassner, who are also Napa High alums. And we talk about, you know, the history in Napa. And, hey, Napa is not, you know, all vineyards and wineries and a great history. We've got a pretty ugly history with regard to race relations. And we talk about, hey, the KKK existed here. And you could go back and we bring up the articles from the past and have them read those. You can actually go up into the cemetery up by where you used to live, mm-hmm. and up at Coombsville, and there's headstones, and we've taken pictures of them and put them on our presentations, and you can see where it says NCPD number one, and AKIA, right? A Klansman I am. Yeah. And there's all these different things, and you have pictures of the, you know, the sheriffs and the law enforcement here in Napa from way back in the day, you know, showing their little signs and their belt buckles. And, you know, when, I don't know if you remember, but when we were seniors, there was a skinhead rally in Jameson Canyon.
Yeah, they rallied. That's famous, actually. The neo-Nazis were allowed to rally up there. Yeah.
And then, fittingly, it rained and rained them out. So nobody showed up.
God intervened. Nice.
Yeah. But, and then there's always, and I've never been able to find anywhere where it's confirmed, but like common lore is that Napa always stood for no African people allowed. Hmm. Like that's something that I've heard multiple times from multiple people. And so that's kind of crazy.
There are the Napa Indians, the legitimate tribe that walked there back before the high school was named Indian. So I don't know. Although you've changed your name, I've told not the Indians anymore. Yeah. Okay.
There was an uproar. We're now the Indians.
Grizzlies?
The Grizzlies, yeah.
What do you got against the Bears? That's crazy. No, just kidding. Yeah. So tell me about the lesson. Tell me about the history lesson that you like to ring home to make it true to these kids who are growing up in Napa. Because yes, there is a dark history, but my mom's history and my dad's history was not dark. So tell them what they're learning in that lesson, please.
Yeah. So we're looking at the 14th Amendment. We talk about citizenship and how the Equal Protection Clause and Due Process Clause are supposed to apply to all citizens, and how that wasn't always the case. And as the local story, you know, your mom and dad were instrumental in helping to move people of color into Napa. It wasn't always allowed. There were restrictive covenants. There was redlining happening. There was, you know, in contracts where it was listed, you know, when you sell the house, you cannot sell it to a person of color. And your parents were instrumental in kind of creating precedent to do away with that and breaking down those barriers so that, you know, people of color who worked in our valley didn't have to come from Fairfield or Vallejo, you know, and could live in the communities where they worked.
One way that they did that was my dad's real estate business, where my mom was instrumental as well, sold the very first Black man a home. His neighbors weren't all that thrilled about that, of course, but, and you know, this was 1968, 70. But yeah, the first Black man to sign title of a home in Napa City was sold by my dad and my mom to him.
Yeah. But prior to that, and even after that, you know, because it wasn't like we had this influx of people of color coming to live in Napa. You know, everybody was living down in the county, down in American Canyon. Yeah. And, I mean, you probably even remember when we went to school, the vast majority of students of color in our school district came to Vintage High, and they were bused in. They were bused in from American Canyon.
Right. And although you and your family took in a future NFL Hall of Famer, Larry Allen for the Cowboys. So, you've always been on the right side of history, let's just say.
Yeah. And my parents, when they graduated high school, well, my dad didn't graduate high school. He was given a choice, either go to jail or join the military. But they went right into the military at 18. And they kind of always talked about that being a great equalizer for them, in the late 50s and early 60s, when things started being, desegregated in the military and in government, businesses that contracted with the government. And they were from cities that, you know, there was a lot more integration than here in Napa. And that's just, you know, the way I was raised. I had somewhat of a racial consciousness. I still, you know, clearly working in school and seeing our students, you know, what the differences and that are things our kids have to deal with and see today, it can be pretty hard for some of the kids to try to make sense of it.
It is. And for those that don't know, you know, Napa is sort of situated in, obviously, in a valley, but you have Vallejo and Richmond and, of course, Oakland and Berkeley, California, which are very heavily Black populated. But Napa to this day is not very Black populated, is it?
No, we're heavily Hispanic is and white are pretty much the majorities here. And like our school now is probably it's upward, getting inching closer to 75% Hispanic.
75 at Napa High. Well,
yeah. And lower socioeconomic. We're, I think, like 60 something percent lower socioeconomic. So, and people don't always think of it, of Napa that way. Right. They think of wineries and it's changed quite a bit economically. You know, we do have a lively downtown area compared to when we were kids. Mm-hmm. You got all the tourism that comes in. And if, I don't know, when was the last time you were back in Napa?
Our reunion, I was there for our 30, and I missed you there, but we, you know, my mom was instrumental in turning the expo into what became Bottle Rock.
Yeah.
And so that first night of Bottle Rock was her last night on earth. She actually died during the Black Keys concert. But that prior to that, when you and I were growing up, it was, you know, rodeo and demolition derby and hay rides and all this kind of thing. But it actually became a destination location, including the Oxbow across the street. The I don't want to call it gentrification because Napa's always been a tourist attraction, but the infrastructure buildup of all of that, my mom was very involved in later in life, not so much as real estate sales, but in her advocacy on the boards and whatnot. So Napa is, I'm thinking, going to be a lot different now that she's been gone 10 years for the next 10 years, because she's also very, was very interested in preservation of spaces, the parks, and not wanting to see a lot of growth. And Napa was blessed to have something called the Ag Reserve, where you just could not build. But I had a feeling that that's been chipped away at by developers over time.
They've tried, for
housing, right?
Yeah, they've tried, but a lot of times it gets shut down. Like that whole corridor coming into Napa, they wanted to put houses on the hillside there. And that was denied by the voters. And even, you know, like the corner of Salvador and Big Ranch Road, past there is the Ag Preserve. And they wanted to build houses out there. And the voters still say, no, we don't want it.
That's good.
Yeah, the wineries are buying up more and more land surrounding Napa, and I don't see them wanting to give it up. So it's a lot of infill now, and a lot of apartments coming in. You see a lot of downtown is, we used to have a cap. Your parents probably knew this, right? Because they were in real estate, and no building could be higher than like 3 stories. And now we're getting much taller buildings. People, the apartments and hotels and restaurants are going up instead of, you know, out. There's nowhere else to go.
That's amazing.
Empty space.
Yeah, that's progress. I mean, people, they got to live somewhere, but they also have to work somewhere. And that's what Napa's been all about ever since. You can go up valley, I guess, and get up there into the Sonomas and the Calistogas, and it's a little better. But it's certainly different than in the 70s when you and I were running around in the open fields with BB guns.
100%.
So I got about 5 minutes left with you. Just if there's anything else in the teachings that you specifically let everyone know about, like if it wasn't for this person, I wouldn't be bothering teaching it. Love to hear it.
Yeah. So I know your mom was also connected deeply to like the Napa College. And I want to believe she sat on the board. Out at the
10 years, half of it as president. Yeah.
And the Napa College has, you know, grown immensely. And if you came out here, you'd see they're putting in dorms and really focusing on bringing people of color to Napa and students of color to Napa and trying to make it a more welcome place. And for other minority, you know, the Jewish community, right, has always had a pretty strong presence here in Napa, and is definitely embraced, I would say, more so than it has been in the past. Although we still have some, you know, crazy people who put signage up, you know, is noticed. Yeah. And we just had Bottle Rock, and Lizzo noticed it and made a comment about some of the signage. But your mom is, as I think people notice when the great people who do great work for people, when they disappear. And I was texting with you and I talked about it, you know, when those people who do that work disappear, and they've carried that on for so long, carrying on that work and doing that heavy lift can be hard, you know, building that capacity for keeping that momentum going is difficult. And so that's like, I remember your mom. I remember being at your house. I remember her being so kind and welcoming, and reading about her and talking to you. And obviously we both had very strong female role models. You know, our moms meant the world to us, who pushed us to make a difference, right? And I think that's the thing. You know, we have to keep those voices alive. We have to make where we're at welcoming, and you know, stand up for people everywhere. And you know, only when you can connect it to a local experience, something that kids can understand, do they seem interested anymore? Because especially after the pandemic, they were, you know, disconnected largely.
Absolutely, yeah.
They just turn off.
That's when those open spaces made all the difference. And I'm told, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm told that there is a monument out there on a walking trail to my mom and her dedication to keeping Napa as best she could. And that when my dad died in 1977, he had all of those attributes that you just talked about, where he does the work and he was out there, you know, changing the world and setting it on fire, but his life was cut short. She didn't really have that upbringing coming from, you know, the Bronx of New York, where it's concrete jungle. People just didn't really do that. But when she came and took over the torch from him up until 2013, she was pretty darn active. And you can drive around Napa and really see the impact, including, we talked about it earlier, the river doesn't flood anymore. I mean, the woman moved a river. She created all that downtown commerce that made it vibrant again. She's, you know, taught in the high school course that you're generous enough to keep that alive. So that's fantastic. And then, you know, just along with other things, including, you had said it, there's always been a Jewish community in Napa, but it's always been small, somewhat mighty. There was never a Jewish cemetery. She spent the last 10 years of her life building her final resting place, mine too, one day, hopefully a long time from now, in St. Helena. It's a gorgeous spot, and it's the first Jewish cemetery in Napa Valley. So that kind of work, I hope, gets carried on to by other people like you who have big hearts and good minds for these type of things and care.
Yeah,
Napa is a great place.
Yeah, I'll be able to go up and check it out and add that into the curriculum too, right?
Yeah, go on a field trip.
Yeah, totally. Throw in the local flavor. You got to do it, or the kids don't, you know, they're not connected to our founding fathers. They don't care about the old, you know, the old guys anymore.
But they should. And yeah, my dad's statue is a famous statue. Is in two places. It's in the Holocaust Museum in San Francisco, and it's in the Napa College Library. So if you ever get a chance to check that out, please do.
Yeah, for sure. Excellent.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on, taking time out of your busy day. I know schools keep you on your toes over there, but really appreciate you coming on and helping me with this tribute today. I appreciate it.
Definitely. Your mom was a great one that should be remembered forever.
Thank you. Hope to see you soon.
Definitely. Call me when you come in town, buddy.
Will do.
Talk to you later.
If you have a beloved horse that you love like a family member and it's on its last legs, you need to call Edward at Tennessee Horse Cremation. He's got the only custom trailer around and never has to drag a horse. He's compassionate and will help make a difficult situation a little bit easier. Call and ask questions anytime. He's available 7 days a week, 931-300-2333, serving Tennessee as well as portions of Kentucky, Georgia, Alabama, and Mississippi. TN Horse Cremation. Welcome to the second Steve and Steve segment of our show.
Our position out of step now, Congresswoman, with the majority of the American people.
Ahead in the, Okay, what was that?
You know those clips sometimes, Steve, they just kind of have a mind of their own. But Steve, what a wonderful show today. We started out with Alveda King, a mother, an individual who loves her community, an activist for the good things, and your mother, an activist for the good things. And her legacy, much like Martin Luther King's legacy and others of his time, your mother's legacy, 10 years after her passing, is still being felt within the community. And that is a wonderful thing. I mean, my father just passed away a week ago, and he left a legacy. And we aren't going to talk about that. But thank you so much, Steve, for bringing on those two guests. It was wonderful. I think a lot of people will really have a tug at the heart. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And thanks for sharing that about your dad. I didn't know if you wanted to bring that in. I felt a little, you know, awkward putting this together, but you know, you did lose your dad last week, and you know, thanks, man. You know, God, by whose mercy the faith departed, find rest, send your holy angel to watch over his grave through Christ our Lord. But we got two comments. I love comments, as you know, love them. And this time on Rumble, folks do listen to us on Rumble, and that is great. So Healing Spirit wrote, excellent interview. Why, thank you, HS. He or she goes on, I pray for the children in today's world. So do we, Healing Spirit. That's about Joey Bright, episode 97. Lots of shows dedicated to what our kids face today with great guests here, like Moms for Liberty's Tiffany Justice, Tricia Lucente, Pastor Amanchukwu Sr., you Patriots school board members, and Alvin Louie, if you remember him, and so many Stephen Steves, all about the war on our kids' minds. Hope you go back and listen to them. They are there forever. We love you, Healing Spirit. Thanks for commenting. One more from EY. The double show at Rich's house was great. You loved it. Why, thank you, EY from Connecticut. I did love every minute of that night. I will never forget it. Be sure to check those two shows out on Spotify and Rumble if you want to see our happy faces. A little bit of Redneck Riviera to go make them happier. Producer Steve worked his butt off to get those out in a timely manner for y'all. Thanks, EY. You're a P1 listener, which in the podcast business means heard them all and been with me from the start. God bless you for spending over 100 hours with me.
Yes.
And I think even heard some Washington State oldies. So that's, you know, now back online with new episodes. So check it out if you want to hear how crazy Washington is versus Tennessee. Mill Creek View, Florida, coming soon. Stay tuned for that. Hey, Thursday is episode 100. Any special plans for us for that, Steve?
Oh, I think I've got a best of Steve and Steve in store. So everybody's going to enjoy that. And awesome. It's going to be a lot of fun.
You know how anniversaries have names like 50 is gold and 70 is platinum?
Yes.
Do you know what 100 is?
No. Is it pearl? No, it's not pearl.
Close. Bone.
Bone.
Ooh. I don't know why. I mean, if you're 100 years old, you don't really want to. Anyway, here we are. The cusp of summer. Kids are home, busy at their summer jobs. Mine's a lifeguard. It's all good. And you survived the great pollination. There are five seasons in Seattle. After spring comes the pollination and then summer. Can't say I missed that my first year away after 20, but it's bad here in Tennessee too. So bad, I hear they were buying meth to turn it back into Sudafed. Anyway. There's six seasons here in Tennessee, if you consider, like I do, August, or what I call Hell's Porch. You get that for like 6 days in Seattle.
Yeah.
Okay, to the show. This will be a short one today. So here goes. Chip Roy, Kevin Kiley light up AOC in debate on debt ceiling and government doing too much. Let's start with clip number one, the Queen.
Are accusing Democrats of saying we spend too much. For anyone that wants to entertain that thought, I ask you to think about the last time a person has said in this country that the government does too much for them, that their Social Security check was too high, that teachers are paid too much. When was the last time anyone has heard or seen that? But they are
your favorite gal, one of your favorite gals.
One of them. I was impressed that she proclaimed that from now on, she's only going to use lowercase letters to protest capitalism.
Oh, you're killing me, Steve. You're killing me.
Okay. Now the rebuttal. Let's hear from
Killing Chick-fil-A. Me softly.
Ocasio-Cortez said, quote, I ask you, think about the last time a person has said in this country that the government does too much for them. When was the last time anyone has heard or seen that? I'll say it. I'll say it right here. I don't want the government doing most of the things that the government is doing to interfere with the ability of the American people to carry out their lives, federal, state, and local. When was the last time you had a bureaucrat show up and you said, oh, joy, thank you. I'm really glad there's a bureaucrat here. When was the last time you were thankful for $32 trillion in debt, $100,000 almost for every man, woman, and child in America?
I think it's 200 million or plus.
Anybody thankful for $32 trillion in debt?
200,000.
Anybody? Yeah. Anybody thankful for a border that's wide open being exploited by cartels while fentanyl comes in and kills our children? Everybody thankful for that Department of Homeland Security that doesn't actually secure the homeland? Everybody thankful for an FBI that went after Scott Smith and labeled him a domestic terrorist for daring to defend his daughter in a school board meeting because she was assaulted in a bathroom? Anybody thankful for the IRS knocking on your door, auditing the poor and the minorities 3 to 5 times more? People thankful for that? Are you thankful for the EPA or the Department of Interior that sent a man to prison because he had some ponds on his ranch in Montana? We have a government that is weaponized against the American people and is undermining our liberties, and they want more of it.
Steve, I got a quick question. When you see these clips, I don't know if there's anybody in these rooms.
Oh, yeah, there never is. They only grandstand for the cameras like I do, actually. But I'll tell you, I'd take one Texas Chip Roy over 1,000 lowercase AOCs.
Oh, yes.
But we are getting those 80,000 new IRS agents with the debt ceiling fail. So voting for Republicans didn't really change much. Okay. I apologize for this in advance, everybody. It's going to make you stupider just by hearing it. But she is the chairman woman of the Progressive Caucus and getting more TV time than Nancy now that she's off to the rest home with Paul. Clip number three, your congresswoman.
Out of step now, congresswoman, with the majority of the American people.
I'm so glad you raised that poll because I think it's really important to look at what that poll says. If you just say to people, should we cut spending? They will probably say yes. However, if you say, would you rather cut spending and reduce the deficit by cutting the tax breaks to the wealthiest corporations and wealthiest individuals, or would you like to cut your own health care, education, care for veterans, etc., I guarantee you that you would have even higher numbers that say, let's make sure that we're making the wealthy pay their fair share.
That's the other thing we've been saying to the Republicans.
That's
not what the poll says. This is the exact question that was asked of voters. What should Congress do on the debt ceiling? Raise only if spending cut, 60%. Raise no matter what, 24%. Not raise, let U.S. default, 15%.
I think America, it's just got a little quotes there.
Yeah. Well, Jayapal suggests the poll's questioning might have produced inaccurate results. She gives away the game. Polls do that when it agrees with Dems' talking points all the time. But the one time CNN, of all places, calls her out, she hides behind it. She had no answer. Honestly, Steve, your congressperson from Seattle may be second dumbest behind lowercase AOC. It's shocking.
I know. My email's
stop,
going.
Stop nowhere. Voting for her, darn it. AOC yeah. backed a migrant truck boycott of Florida. It had zero impact. A trucker boycott of the state of Florida following Governor Ron DeSantis' bill that imposed stricter penalties and restrictions on illegal migrants in Florida is yet to materialize. The lack of action came despite corporate media hype and support from Democratic Congresswoman lowercase AOC. Even the leftist Tallahassee Democrat conceded this week they were unaware of any truckers actually boycotting the Sunshine State. The president of Florida Trucking Association, Alex Miller, furthermore told the British left-wing website The Independent, "I am aware of the reports but have not heard of any issues." Corporate media sources originally reported empty shelves due to the protest. it soon became apparent that one of their videos was from October and showed shortages due to Hurricane Ian. Another showed a recent refrigeration issue at a supermart, a Walmart super center. So
fake news.
Maybe lowercase AOC is losing her oomph.
Yes.
Okay. Let's wrap up today's heavy show with this. Pandemic's economic toll estimated at $14 trillion through end of 2023 by Corey Smith, a national desk. The pandemic economic toll on our country will reach $14 trillion by the end of the year. According to a team of researchers at the University of Southern California, they acknowledge that putting a price tag on all the pain, suffering, and upheaval caused by COVID-19 is difficult. But more than 1 million Americans lost their lives to the virus, and more than 6 million Americans were hospitalized. But the economic impact have also been real and significant. The USC team looked at data from the first 30 months of the pandemic up to the summer and projected the total economic losses over a four-year period. They say the nation's gross domestic product would have been $117 trillion without the pandemic. Instead, the GDP from 2020 to 2023 is estimated to be $103 trillion. The research looked at only the pandemic's standard economic effects. Their estimate doesn't account for something like the lost years of work from a person who died from the disease or someone who is suffering from long COVID. And they didn't attempt to calculate the fiscal impacts of mental health troubles or learning loss resulting from the pandemic. Good job, my alma mater, USC. I'm still not giving you another penny until you take down that dismantle whiteness from back in 2018. Last time I gave an artistic mural have been installed at the University of Southern California that declared dismantle whiteness in big black and white capital letters, one part of a larger display designed to spark conversations regarding racism, sexism, and xenophobia, according to its creators. The mural was designed by the Feminist Artists Collective When Women Disrupt in conjunction with students in the class. Quote, women, designing media for social change. According to a USC Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism post on Facebook touting the piece, the work was sponsored by the Institute for Diversity and Empowerment, IDEA, and USC Visions and The Voice as part of USC Annenberg's off-the-wall series of multimedia art installations. Again, that was 2018. Pretty much set me on the path of anti-racism ever since.
Well, I gotta do a little rap music there, Steve.
I appreciate it.
A little rap music.
That's the USC fight song. And a win. I'll end on a win. Texas Christian Hospital, the nation's largest children's hospital, will no longer offer transgender medical procedures for children in compliance with Senate Bill 14. Way to go, Texas. For my lifetime, they say, as California goes, so goes the country. Let's hope this one goes the way of Texas. And it's anti-racism. I'm not racist. Anti-racist. Stay tuned for my thought of the day.
I'm Lee Greenwood, and this is Mill Creek View Podcast. And we're here at John Rich's house.
Do you love that song? Looking forward to them joining the Big Ten? Not giving them any money until they take down that sign. And welcome to my quote for the day. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Tennessee Podcast. Go to Rumble or Spotify or iTunes and hit the subscribe button and follow us. While you're there, go ahead and leave a comment. And thanks for doing it. Abortion and racism are both symptoms of a fundamental human error. The error is thinking that when someone stands in the way of our wants, we can justify getting that person out of our lives. Abortion and racism stem from the same poisonous root, selfishness. Alveda King. We should recognize that women become mothers the moment they are pregnant. Alveda King. Unlike plagues of the Dark Ages or contemporary diseases, we do not yet understand the modern plague of overpopulation is soluble by means we have discovered and with resources we possess. What is lacking is not sufficient knowledge of the solution, but universal consciousness of the gravity of the problem and education of the billions who are its victims. Coretta Scott King delivered a speech on behalf of her husband on May 5th, 1966, called Family Planning, a Special and Urgent Concern by the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., her aunt. Words are inadequate for me to say how honored I was to be the recipient of the Margaret Sanger Award. I am happy to be the recipient of the Margaret Sanger Award, and I can assure you that this distinct honor will cause me to work even harder for a reign of justice and a rule of love all over our nation. Sincerely yours, Martin Luther King Jr., the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., upon accepting in its first year the Planned Parenthood Federation of American Margaret Sanger Award, was given to four men: Dr. Carl G. Hartman, General William H. Draper Jr., Lyndon Baines Johnson, and Martin Luther King Jr., for his courageous resistance to bigotry and his lifelong dedication to the advancement of social justice and human dignity. That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Alveda King, for reminding us all God's children's lives matter. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of mcview.us. See you tomorrow, and peace in our time. Go down there, 'cause from here it looks like a little blue ball, but that's a great big place, and I'm so small. Why can't I just stay here with you? Did I make you mad? Don't you want me to? And God said, "Old child, of course I do." But there's somebody special that's waiting for you. So hush now, baby, don't you cry, 'cause there's someone down there waiting whose only goal in life is making sure you're always gonna be alright. Loving angel, tender, tough and strong. It's almost time to go and meet your mom. Now when she's talking
recording
to
stopped.
You, make sure. County Fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like
any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.